Silence.
Oppenheimer!
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Pride Radio!
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 125 of Nerd Pride Radio. 125, awesome number because it's 5 cubed, but also it's the age of the city of Chicago. Founded in 1890, Chicago turned 125 last year. Yay, Chicago. Okay, so ask me how I'm doing today. Go on. Ask me, she did. I am awesome. My name is Mike Jones. I am a D&D/Pathfinder nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd. Plus, there's like 7 other kinds of nerd I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You are listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my skull anymore. As always, you're listening to the best-smelling podcast on the internet. Surprisingly, this week, Nerd Pride smells kind of like vomiting teenagers. I'll explain that in a minute, because we've got a little bit of feedback. That's right, from a listener, George P. Burdell, who requested I actually put this in the listener betrayal segment at the end, but I'm going to do it at the beginning so I can explain the whole vomiting teenagers thing. He says, how awesome is DM Kyle? So awesome. Yeah, we're playing Homeroom, as I've mentioned many times before, and apparently it's a Groundhog's Day thing. It's a live die repeat thing. It's weird because in the game we're playing junior high kids, and we go through our entire day, and then finally at the end of the day during gym class, a bunch of us get trapped in the equipment room. Weird stuff is happening. Everybody winds up throwing up all over the place. That's the vomiting teenagers portion of it. And big bright light, flash, boom. Day starts over at the beginning. We all remember it, but we've all started over and nobody else seems to know what's going on. So clearly we've got to solve this, and I have no idea where we're going with it. But it is really exciting and really fun. So congratulations to Kyle for creating such an awesome game, and congratulations to the rest of us for getting to play in it, because that is so cool. But enough of that. We're going to get straight into the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast. This is the time for me when I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. If something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy, busy week, I add it to my master list, and then the very best stuff off that list in my handy-dandy pocket mod, which I have right here, gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs. Okay, but before I get into my master list, it just occurred to me, whenever I was taking down notes for this show and I've been writing things and whatever, every time I want to say homeroom, I say homecoming. And so in that feedback bit where I mentioned my brother's game, I hope I said homeroom. But now I'm paranoid that I said homecoming because I keep doing that. I don't know what my problem is. Anyway, homeroom is the name of the game. So anyway, the first thing on my master list, it's a nerd culture report.
I thought this was bowling for weirdos.
No, Gonzo, but you are very, very close. This week I have two new webcomics that I've been reading, and I absolutely love them. The first one that I found is one called O Human Star, and O is just the letter O, but ohumanstar.com. It's a webcomic by Blue Delaquanti, and it is just fascinating. It is a story about, it opens up with a guy who is a brilliant robotics designer, engineer. He apparently died, murdered something. He was dead. And when he wakes up, he finds himself in a robot body 16 years in the future. And it is just fascinating. It is a It's an examination of just identity and difference, and I think the nature of robots in this world is a commentary. Well, it's I don't think it is. It's very obviously a commentary on gay culture and trans culture and what it is to be different, what it is to fit in, to pass, as it were. And it's just it's a fascinating story, and it's a really cool sci-fi tale, as well as a very cool human tale, and I'm really really enjoying it. And that one comes out what once a week, I think, and it's really good. And then the other one I'm reading, and this is my favorite. I am so excited about this one. It's called Strong Female Protagonist at strongfemaleprotagonist.com. And it is a comic about in a world of superheroes where all the superheroes are very young. Some event happened 15, 16, 17 years ago, 20 years ago, and a whole bunch of people were born with superpowers. And the most powerful of them, the female protagonist mentioned in the title of the comic, has now decided that this is not the way to solve the world's problems. This is not right. And so she steps down. And this is her life afterwards, as she's trying to get on with her life, trying to go to college, trying to figure out how to make a difference in the world. And it's brilliant, really brilliant. And it's at times very talky. There's a lot of philosophy in here. There's a lot of meta commentary on stuff. And I'm just absolutely in love with it. I think it's wonderful. So I strongly recommend both of these. Strong Female Protagonist, by the way, writer and artist are Brennan Lee Mulligan and Molly Ostertag, and they are wonderful. I highly recommend both of these, ohumanstar.com and strongfemaleprotagonist.com. Get out there and read them. They are wonderful. And there's like 6 books already. Of Strong Female Protagonist. I got through all of them in about a couple of days, and now I'm caught up and I'm just waiting because updates every Tuesday and Friday. So just, crossing my legs and waiting. So awesome, awesome stuff. So that's it for my Nerd Culture Report. What's up next? You know what I haven't done in a long time? My Science Corner.
Ooh, she blinded me with science.
She blinded me with science.
Blinded me with science.
And that music means if you don't walk away now, you might be in danger of learning something. Okay, I have so much science this week and not enough time to talk about all of it. So for the first topic, do you guys want to hear about dark matter and dark energy? Or do you want to hear about statistical analysis and political polls? Yeah, I know, me too. But we don't have time for both. So you know what? Let's tell you what. We'll do statistical polling stuff next week, and this week we'll talk about dark matter and dark energy. Here's the deal. And this is I've been practicing for this topic by explaining it to my kids, and they pick up way faster than I thought they would, so that's cool. But also, part of the easy part about it is that with dark matter and dark energy, we don't know anything, so it's actually not that tough to understand, because we know nothing. It's wonderful. Turns out that if we go out and weigh the universe... Because, we look out at all the stuff that we can see in the universe, and we weigh it all. We know how much the galaxy should weigh, roughly. All right, we know how much mass is out there. We have a very good estimate of all of that. And so then we look at the motions of the galaxies, which will then tell us how much gravitational pull we have out there, and thus how much matter there should be. And as it turns out, there's like 6 times as much matter out there as there should be. Like, literally, we look and we see... all of every star, planet, galaxy, all of the stuff that we can see and account for out there. And then there's 5 times as much stuff out there that we can't see. We honestly have no idea what it is. That's the dark matter. And we call it dark matter just because we're in the dark about it. We honestly know nothing. We can't see it at all, but we know it exists because we can feel its gravity. We can measure its gravity. We can see what it does to the universe. And it is significant. All right. So that's our first mystery is what the heck is all of this dark matter? And, we look out at it and the things we know that it isn't, we know it's not antimatter because that was my kids' first question. All of them got hung up on the idea that it might be antimatter. And I'm like, no, not antimatter, dark matter. Antimatter, we actually understand pretty well. Antimatter works in very specific ways, and we know what it would do. And if it was antimatter, we'd be seeing a lot more matter-antimatter collisions out there. We'd see gamma ray bursts off of it. It would be very recognizable if it was antimatter. It's not antimatter. All right. It's also not just a bunch of rocks and dust and stuff that just isn't lit up. Because that's the other possibility, is that maybe there's just a bunch of junk out there, but none of it's ignited into stars, and so therefore we can't see it because it's not lit up. But unfortunately, that can't be it either, because if there was that much dust and rocks and pebbles and crap floating around out there, it would be absorbing a lot more light. We would notice that too. We would be able to tell. We would have seen it a long time ago. So it's not traditional matter in any way. It's not baryonic matter, as in the large, you know, things we think of when we think of atoms. It's not any of that. Okay. What about black holes? That was another question that Noah asked. Well, is it just really big black holes so we can't see them? No, because if they were black holes also give off a signature radiation that we would notice. Or even if we didn't see the radiation from them, black holes cause a very specific type of gravitational lensing that would be effects we could see. It's not black holes. It's some other thing that's not made of atoms, not made of traditional matter as we're used to looking at it. And yet it is still matter and still exerts gravity and still affects us. It affects the universe hugely. And we have no idea what it is. And then the other part of the equation is the dark energy. We went and looked to see the expansion rate of the universe, because as we measure all this matter, and we know how much is out there, including the dark matter, we measure it all, and we think, okay, so at some point, the universe needs to slow down. The universe needs to slow down, and everything's going to contract again and pull back together. And I remember that from the 80s and 90s. I remember that. I remember that being one of the possibilities on how the universe was going to end, is that possibly, you know, we start with a big bang, we have all this expansion, then eventually the gravity pulls it all back together, and we end in a big crunch. But as it turns out, we're not. In fact, not only is it still expanding, the rate of expansion is increasing over time, which means it's never going to pull back together. The universe will expand infinitely forever. So why? And what that means is there has to be a huge amount of energy out there that is pushing against the universe and causing this expansion. And what do we call that? We call that the dark energy, because, again, we are completely in the dark. We have no idea what it is. We can't see it. We can't detect it. We just see the effects of it. We know there has to be this energy out there, because otherwise the universe doesn't behave this way. And how much is there? Here's the deal. Mass, energy are equivalent. All right, you can transfer mass into energy and vice versa, theoretically. And so therefore, when we look at the grand total of stuff in the universe, and I said, you know, our own visible matter, our traditional matter, is only, you know, 1/6 of the actual matter that's out there. Well, guess what? You add all of that together, dark energy is twice all of that. Dark energy is 2/3 of the whole universe, 67%, in fact, or 68%. 68, roughly. Dark energy is the bulk of the universe, and yet we're clueless. Have no idea what any of it is. All right. Now, a lot of you already know a lot of this or have heard this before. And so I bring it up because I heard on the podcast The Infinite Monkey Cage this week, they got to talking about dark matter and dark energy, and it was just fascinating. They had a couple of astrophysicists on there in addition to a couple of comedians. And the astrophysicists were just, they were in heaven getting to talk about this, because it was wonderful. This is their field, and they're getting to share with people and educate people. And they were so animated. It was really, really fun to listen to. And one of them came up with the best analogy I've ever heard of on the matter. She said, no, when it's finally solved, when we finally figure out what it is, she said, it's going to be epicycles. And I knew instantly what she meant, but then she went on to explain it just in case, and so I will too. That once upon a time, we looked up at the heavens and we saw that very clearly the sun moved around the earth. It's obvious. It was so blatantly obvious that there was no reason to even question it. The sun went around the earth. We can watch it. It goes in a very measurable and predictable path. Very easy. The moon at a slightly different rate, but the moon also clearly went around the earth. Different path, but went around the earth. Easy to measure, easy to figure out, no problem. The heavens, the stars, also all of the stars moved around the earth, nice and predictable. Again, sun, moon, stars, all slightly different rates, but clearly went around the Earth. Everything orbits us. It was easy. It was easy and predictable and obvious, right? Except for the planets, the wanderers. And so, and that's why we called them planets. They wandered. They didn't fit the pattern of everything else. I mean, they kind of went around the Earth, but then sometimes they would backtrack and they'd do these odd little squiggles and they didn't work quite right. And eventually we got to the point where we decided that, that we needed to account for that. There needed to be an explanation for why the planets moved as stupidly as they did. And, you know, obviously they've been doing this forever. You know, we can trace the paths of them forever and ever. There's got to be a good reason for all this. There's got to be something to explain it. And so we came up with epicycles. We're like, okay. So they don't move in a nice smooth circle around the Earth like everything else does, but maybe they're moving in circles around a path that makes a circle around the Earth. These are the epicycles. And so we have circles within circles within circles. And we have these very convoluted, gear-like diagrams of how the planets would be moving. That it like being on some bizarre, carnival ride, like the Zipper. You ever been on the Zipper? All right. You're sitting in a car and that car is spinning around on its own little axis. But then also the car is moving around a track that goes around this long hot dog shape. And then the entire oblong hot dog shape is also flipping over and over and over. So you've got circles on circles on circles, epicycles. All right. The planets, we figured, must be doing something like that. And they came up with the most convoluted math to sort out exactly what these epicycle paths were to figure out the planets. And it was never quite perfect, but man, we were getting closer. We kept getting closer and closer until finally one day somebody said, hey, you know what sorts this all out? Oh, look at this. What if we all go around the sun? Oh, shoot. Hey, you know what? You're right. All the math just simplifies itself now. We're done. That was it. That was the epicycles. And I think when what she said, and I think she's absolutely right, is that at some point we're going to come up with an explanation for dark matter and dark energy. We're going to figure out what it is that makes these make sense. And it's going to be like epicycles. It's going to be figuring these out is going to change our fundamental understanding of how everything in the universe works. That it will, suddenly, it will be a complete sea change in how things are looked at. Because, I mean, at this point, dark energy is somehow, because, you know, people have tried to tie it back to Einstein's cosmological constant. He had this extra number thrown in that basically just an energy of the universe that kind of kept it static. And that, because otherwise his, you know, all of his theories said, you know, gravity would eventually pull everything back together. And obviously we can't be changing. So therefore, he threw in a cosmological constant, some natural energy of space itself that kind of kept us from collapsing on ourselves, that kept the universe in a static balance. And now they're thinking, okay, maybe not static balance, but maybe there is a natural energy to space itself. That cosmological constant is a real thing. And there's an energy to space itself. And thus, as space expands, you have more space, therefore more energy. Thus, the reason we're expanding faster and faster as the universe goes on. But why? Why would we have a cosmological constant? Why would there be a natural energy to space itself? Because that's not accounted for in anything we've already got. And we're coming up with more and more convoluted epicycles to try and explain it. And it's just not quite right. It just never quite fits. There's lots of good theories, but nobody likes them. I mean, you know, they have their favorites, but, you know, there's no one that everyone's come together going, you know what? I bet you're right. I bet it's something like that. We just can't come to it. So somewhere, some genius eventually, it's probably Noah is my guess, some genius is going to look out at these and go, hey, you know what would make all this make more sense? And then click, it's all done. I'm so excited that maybe I might be alive when that happens. That would be so cool. So anyway, that's my dark energy, dark matter talk. And then, okay, the other thing, this one I can't put off till next week. The other thing is Planet Nine. Did you guys hear this? Did you see the reports? I am dumbfounded. Just, they discovered a new planet, they think, using math. How exciting is that? I mean, this is so exciting that I'm not even going to quibble over the fact that they're calling it Planet Nine when Pluto really should still be a planet. This should really be like Planet 17 or something, but I'll give them this one. Okay. A group noticed that there were several trans-Neptunian objects, stuff that's just way out there. These things that have the huge orbits around the solar system. And they spotted six of them in particular that had these wild elliptical eccentric orbits, but they all leaned the same way away from the sun. right? They're all going out in the same direction, out away from the sun, and it seemed odd that they were kind of clustered like that. So by measuring the orbits of those objects and the angles of it and the whole business, they figured out that, you know what? This would all make a lot more sense if we had a big planet, a big one, that had a similar orbit, but facing the other way, going off the other side of the solar system. And they thought to themselves, okay, this is crazy, because clearly, when we do the math, this comes up to be an object that's, you know, 10 times the size of Earth, and yet no one's ever spotted it before. So clearly, we're probably crazy on this. So they spent the next 18 months, they figured this all out 2 years ago, spent the next 18 months trying to prove themselves wrong, trying to find some way that they must be making a mistake on this. And it turns out they don't think they are now. And so they finally published it just last week or two. And the thing is, a planet that would be 10 times the mass of Earth, which for comparison's sake, all right, Uranus is 14 and a half times the size of Earth. Neptune, 17 times the size of Earth. So we're talking something up almost to gas giant size, or maybe it is gas giant size. And they're thinking this would be an object that should have been in that cluster of gas giants, the four that we have. It should have been in there, and yet probably something like Jupiter knocked its ass out of orbit and sent it spiraling off into this big, wild 20,000-year orbit around the sun. And so the thing is gigantic and winds up, because part of the thing about being a planet is you have to be big enough, to be round. This certainly qualifies. It's bigger than most of the planets. Well, bigger than half the planets, let's call it that. And it has to go around the sun, which it clearly does, or would, if it matches the math that they've come up with. And it has to control its own orbit. It has to clear its orbit and be the dominant force in its orbit. Well, the fact that we've got six other objects whose orbits are all shaped based on what this dude does, I think it wins that one. All right, I think it's got all these factors hands down. So all we have to do now is spot the thing. We know what its orbit should look like. We know, you know, we just don't know where it would be right now. So it's a matter of finding it. And again, I know what you're thinking is, but 10 times the size of the Earth. I mean, it's as big as a gas giant. With our telescopes, we should be able to find the sucker, right? Well, it may not be as easy as all that because, yeah, it's relatively big compared to us, but it's traveling at its closest pass to the sun. It's still five times as far away as Pluto, all right? So that's huge distances, all right? And then you want to go out to its farthest point from the sun when it gets out to the far end of that ellipse. The sucker is six times as far out as that again. So, you know, 30 times the distance of Pluto. All right. Thing, like I say, maybe a 10,000 to 20,000 year orbit. This thing is taking its time and it is way out there somewhere. So at that distance, even at 10 times Earth mass, it's still a speck. It's still a tiny little thing in a huge, huge vastness. So, it's going to be a while, but I'm hoping we spot it. I'm hoping we find it. How cool would this be? I mean, look, I'm excited when we find little rocks going around the sun and this thing is gigantic and completely undiscovered until now. That would be amazing. You know what we need? We need a new space telescope. Where's James Webb? Yeah, 2.5 years out, James Webb Space Telescope, 2018, October of 2018, we'll have that sucker up, ready to go. This will be so cool. So we're looking for Planet 9. So now, really, the only challenge is what do we call it? Now, the people who discovered it or who have done the math for it, who don't actually get to name it, but they've done the math to say that it should be there, and NASA is you know, making sure that everyone's taking this with a grain of salt and going, you know, look, at this point, it's still technically a theory. Yes, their math is pretty impressive, but until we spot it, there could be lots of explanations. We don't know what's going on. But once we find it and we name it, the people who have done the math, they want to call it Planet George, in honor of, did you know that Uranus was originally the guy who discovered it, wanted to name it George in honor of King George III? So they want to call it George because they think that's cute and funny. But others, Persephone always gets kicked around for the 10th planet, or 9th planet in this case. Persephone always gets kicked around as the spouse of Pluto. But the one I really like, Nyx. Nyx, goddess of night. Ooh, how cool would that be for something that's, that big and yet that far away? Yeah, Nyx would be an awesome name for a planet. But they're not asking my opinion, at least not yet. Maybe they'll have a contest. Maybe. We'll see. Anyway. That's Planet 9. I'm so excited. Enough of the science corner. What's up next? Roku! I don't need to do a big long Roku because this is going to be a really short segment. Roku is the box that I use to watch all of my streaming TV services, so I don't have regular cable anymore. I watched Heathers the other night. Heathers, 1988, 89, whatever it was. And, you know what movie from the 80s doesn't hold up? Heathers. Oh, man, I was so disappointed. It was, I haven't watched the thing in over 20 years. I think the last time I saw it was right after it came out. Maybe I've only seen it once. Either way, watching Heathers, oh, I was so disappointed. I remember being, 18, 19 years old, watching Heathers for the first time and thinking it was really, really clever. And it was a really deep commentary on society. And as I watch it now, it is so pretentious and so full of itself and so obvious and clunky in all of its analogies. It just, oh, it was painful. Although on the other hand, I'm watching it going, oh, yeah, that's right. I remember why I was in love with Winona Ryder when I was in high school. Yeah, that's right. She was adorable. But the movie itself, I mean, she even, when she's writing in her diary, she wears a monocle to write in her diary. That's how pretentious this movie is. Oh, it was so deep, so dark. All right. Anyway, but I'm thinking, watched with the right group of people, I think there's a camp factor to Heathers that makes it worth watching. But again, I was just watching it by myself, so I can't really say. I mean, this was a rewatching where I'm basically, after 30 years, 20 years, I'm looking at it going, oh, that's not nearly as cool as I remember. Oh, yeah, that's a little painful. Yeah, that was obvious. But maybe if I were to watch it with the right group, maybe it would be a lot of fun again. But hard to say. Anyway, I watched Heathers. I was a little disappointed. Had to bring it to you guys. All right. You know what else I haven't done in a long time? That's right, the Unnamed History segment.
Don't know much about history.
Oh, haven't you guys missed that music? Okay. So I'm studying with Aiden for a government test the other night, and we come across the crucial year in American history of 1763. And I learned a bunch of stuff that I didn't know, and when I learned things, I have to share. So, did you know? All right, first off, from the early 1600s to about the mid-18th century, 150 years worth of time, the American colonies, the British American colonies, were pretty much left alone. We were self-governed, we did whatever we wanted, we didn't pay any taxes, and the Brits were happy to keep us that way. It was fine. You know what? We provided a bunch of stuff back to them, we gave them raw materials, we were a nice market for their goods, money was being made on all sides, so they didn't mess with us. I mean, yes, we had appointed governors, and yes, we had to answer them, but when it takes 2 months to get a message back over there, and then 2 months for a response on what we need to do, it's not like they were very hands-on. All right. So they kind of let us do whatever we wanted to do, and it worked out really well for everybody. All right. And then all of that changed in 1763. How come? The French and Indian War. That's why. All right. 1763 is the Treaty of Paris that helps end the French and Indian War. And as a result of that, with the French and Indian War over, we've pretty much eliminated most of the menace to us in the immediate areas of the colonies. All right, so everything east of the Mississippi at this point, we don't really have anything to fear from the French or anybody. And so therefore, we don't really need as much of the protection of the British soldiers as we needed before. I mean, before, it's always nice to have them around. They helped us out. We kept them around pretty tax-free. Again, we didn't pay for any of that. And they hung out over here, and everyone was still okay with that because, they were insuring British interests. They were making money off of it. Everyone was good. But now, we don't really have the threat anymore. All right, we don't really need the British soldiers as much as we used to. And on top of that, the British have this huge war debt that they've built up from fighting the French and Indian War. Basically, for saving our bacon, they've built up this huge pile of debt and, come around to King George, and he and people around him rightfully thought that, maybe the American colonies need to start pitching in. We did spend an awful lot of money on this war to keep them safe and secure their interests as well as ours. Maybe they should start help paying this back. And so thus came around the stamp tax and the other taxes that led to us dumping a bunch of tea in the harbor and throwing a big fit about it. And that's why, is because suddenly they said that they wanted to tax us. And we said, yeah, you know what? We didn't ask you to pay this war. We weren't fighting it. Come on. This is what? This is on you guys. And so that's why. And we walked away. I had no idea that again, you know, here, you know, we'd had this nice little setup. And once they finally started asking us to pay for stuff, then we said, yeah, you know what? We think we can just do it on our own now. And so we did. You know, right or wrong, that's just a story that I wasn't familiar with in my learnings of American history in grade school and what little of it I got in college. That, to me, that was just fascinating. I mean, now, granted, there was also the whole business of taxation without representation. I get that too. And also, we were kind of mad at George because he was kind of a prick. All right. I mean, all right. Yeah, so we dumped a bunch of tea in the harbor, and you know, we had our protests, and that was pretty egregious, I'll give you that. But his response to that was to revoke Massachusetts' right to govern at all. That basically he just dissolved their government. Not that he actually dissolved their government, because again, 2 months away, and you know, we had taken up arms by this point. But you know, shut down Boston Harbor, revokes Massachusetts' right to govern themselves. That'll teach those guys a lesson. And he was pretty draconian about stuff. But on the other hand, what if they had given us representation? I mean, do you think if they had given us, you know, like maybe 2 or 3 members in the House of Commons, do you think that would have made a difference for us? Do you think if we had had 2 voting members in the House of Commons, that would have somehow shifted things in our favor? Do you think we would have been happy with that? That we'd be okay with paying taxes to the crown for the first time ever? You think we would have been all right with that if we had had a little bit of representation? That's a good question. But again, the whole thing was just brand new to me, because I've just never delved that deeply into the American Revolution at all. And I was just fascinated to see it. And the other interesting thing we got out of this government test, we were also studying the Constitution and, you know, how it's made up, and the first 10 amendments, the Bill of Rights, obviously. And we looked back at the Magna Carta, which offered, you know, limited the power of the crown and offered rights to the people for the first time, really. And then the English Petition of Rights and the English Bill of Rights, the Virginia, Statement Declaration of Rights. I can't remember what it was called before that in the colonies. And we looked at all these things and the elements of them that were all incorporated into our Bill of Rights. And do you know what right because we took pretty much everything offered in all of those documents and put together. You know what one right we offer in the Bill of Rights that was never spelled out before anywhere? Freedom of speech. The American Bill of Rights, as far as I know, was the first time any government explicitly gave its citizens the right to say and think whatever they wanted. Really? I mean, that is powerful. And, you know, freedom of speech is my favorite right. So, I just thought that was super cool. And also, did you know that there were two other amendments that were proposed to be in there in the first 12? And those two never got passed? Really? I thought that was cool. So I had to immediately go and look and go, wait. We only got 10 out of 12. Which ones did we miss? So I looked up those two, and, the first one was about how to apportion population for the House of Representatives. And essentially, Madison, when he drew these suckers up, Madison wanted each member of Congress, of the House of Representatives, he wanted each one to have just a very small congregation of his own, or her own, his at the time, and wanted each one to be responsible to just a limited number of people, so that they never became, you know, too distant from the people, that everyone in your district should know you, right? That you should have a connection to the common man. You should, ultimately we rejected that, which, you know, maybe is a good thing, because I have no idea what that would be now. But, you know, if we had a House of Representatives that was 3,000 members, I mean, is that too unwieldy? Is that, you know, so ultimately they limited it at 435 and figured as the population grows, we'll just reapportion as we go. So that one never went anywhere. But the other one was an amendment to say that members of Congress can't vote themselves a pay raise. That was it. All right. That if they want to vote to raise their pay, because they're the only ones that have the authority to spend that money. So if they wanted to raise their own pay, It couldn't take effect immediately. It would only take effect with the beginning of the next Congress. So therefore, you can't raise your own pay, but you can raise it for the next group of people to come after you, which 2/3 of the time, 3/4 of the time is the same group of people. So you are effectively giving yourself a pay raise. But that one was rejected at the time. And it turns out that, what, in the 90s, I think, some very industrious student discovered that that amendment, even though it was never ratified, they could never get enough states for it, it didn't have a time limit on it. So that means technically that amendment, while it was never ratified, was still an open question and was still perfectly viable. And if enough states ratified it, it could become law. So he went out there and made a push for it, and sure as crap, they went ahead and ratified it. It was one. It's our 26th amendment, whatever our last amendment is. I can't remember what we're up to. 26, 27. It's the last amendment we have. So the last amendment we have was proposed along with the Bill of Rights. It just took us till now to get to it. It took us 200 and something years to get around to finally finishing that sucker off. I thought that was really impressive. So anyway, that's what I learned studying for government this week. So I thought that was really cool stuff. All right, and that is the end of the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast, which means it's time for the Pod-O-Matic! Hot dog. This is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 and his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. And where do these topics come from, you ask? Well, that is where you come in. You can't see it. I'm pointing at you directly. You want to hear me haver on about something? Then you send your question or topic to me by email, or better yet, in a private message on my forums, and I will add it to my Pod-O-Matic list. Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. And my first number is 13. And if I had my list up here, this would be a lot faster, wouldn't it? Here we go. 13 is from Mrs. Darks. Mrs. Darks says, do you think Tannis and the Black Tapes are going to end up being the same story? Oh, you know, Joel and I were just talking about this. Joel, by the way, who isn't going to be around much longer? Joel's super nerd, brilliant guy, knows a lot, and he has, in the years that I've known him, many times applied for other positions within his department, and he applies for them, he generally gets offered them, and then he goes, I was just seeing, the terms aren't quite right, but thanks anyway. And then he turns them down. Well, he finally got offered one that he couldn't turn down. And so, he's going off to be a trainer where he can sit around and show people how smart he is, tell people how wrong they are all the time. He's really going to enjoy that, but it means he won't be in town with us anymore. He won't be sharing an office right next to mine anymore. So no more Joel stories, sadly. But, back to Mrs. Darks' question. Do you think Tannis and the Black Tapes are going to end up being the same story? Now, for those of you who haven't been listening to my advice and you're not listening to the Black Tapes podcast or the Tannis podcast, you need to go do that, especially the Black Tapes. Black Tapes is really, really good. Tannis, also good, but it's a little more convoluted and a little tougher to follow. But they are both produced by the same company, Northwest Stories, and they're both mystery, probably horror podcasts, and telling these awesome fictional tales, but in a style like the Serial podcast, so in a style like a documentary news show type of thing. And they're really, really good. And since they're done by the same people, and in fact, the guy who narrates Tannis is the producer for the Black Tapes. It's the same character, same person. And they appear on each other's podcasts on a regular basis. There's a possibility, since both of these are really supernatural in effect. It's possible that they may be connected in some way. Or as Mrs. Darks here suggests, maybe they might even wind up being the same story with the same resolution ultimately. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think so, because I think they're shaping them up to be two, separate things. I really do. As much as they have crossover of people, I don't see them having the same elements. I mean, clearly, look, Tannis is searching for the city of Tannis or the location of Tannis. And the Black Tapes is I'm pretty sure about demons. So it's not quite the same thing, but I don't know. I don't know. I hate to say no, and then it turns out that, yeah, there's a connection. I don't think it's going to be the same story. Maybe there are connections, but I don't even think that. I think this is all going to be completely different. That's my own personal take on it. But what do I know? We're barely getting into these things yet, so we'll see as it unfolds. 73 takes us down to... Oh, it's my brother Kyle. Kyle says, why do I always refer to him as my brother Kyle? Why can't I just say Kyle? I don't know. Does it make it more awesome that he's my brother? He's pretty awesome in his own right. I think we already settled that in the feedback section. Kyle says, you have another kid, and you're going to name it after a character or NPC you created from a role-playing game. What would you name it if it's a girl or if it's a boy? That is, All right. Well, as it turns out, I wouldn't name it after a character from a role-playing game that I've created solely because my wife would never let me do that. I mean, I'm just going to guarantee you, as much as I want to name my son Raven Darkleaf, I don't think Lisa's going to allow that. I'm pretty sure. She says maybe Raven. Okay, well, I never had a character named Raven, Darkleaf or otherwise, so therefore, that's not really in contention. I was trying to come up with the most egregious name. Could we name a daughter Dothan? She says sure. Yeah, since we're never having kids, after this, you think that's a pretty safe bet to say yes to? All right, Dothan. I definitely like the name Dothan for a girl. I love that name. So that would be for a girl. But for a boy, let me think of what boy characters I would, I can't even think of any of my other characters other than Dothan at this point. Who was the dumb guy? I don't want to name it after him because I intentionally I intentionally picked a dumb name for him, Dimmy. Yeah, I'm definitely not naming a kid Dimmy. But I really liked him as a character, but I hate that name. I don't know. The only other guy I can think of my characters is Olibaro, which is a name that I actually use on some of my online accounts and stuff. And I like Olibaro because you can call him Ollie, but I don't even know how much I like Ollie. You know, Oliver's a popular name right now, but that's a tough one. All right, Dothan is a sure thing. For a boy, we'd have to think about it. 69, dude. 69 is from Daz. I haven't seen one from Daz in a while. Daz says, is there a secret location on the internet where the Animal Cast Drunkisode can still be found? No. In fact, most egregiously, I don't have a copy of that episode anymore. Not only can the Animal Cast not be found anywhere online anymore, because our hosting for it, cut off, but I don't have copies of most of the Animal Cast. I have maybe a dozen episodes. And then recently I just found a disc that I burned for somebody that has like the first 17 episodes all on one disc. And I haven't even loaded it to see if it's actually still a good CD. But yeah, I don't have most of that stuff myself. And, Kyle claims that he still has it. And I've mentioned in passing a couple times, hey, you know what would be cool? I would love to get a copy of that. And at first he's like, oh yeah, I can make a copy of that. It'll take me a little bit, and now it's, oh, well, I don't know. It's all in backup stuff and it would be, clearly wherever it is, it's going to be a chore for him to get out. I assume he still has it all, but for all I know, they may be lost to the ages. They may just be legends at this point. And that's okay too. I don't mind that. The Drunkisode, for those of you who haven't heard me describe it before, my brother and I decided that it would be really, really awesome if we had an episode of the podcast in which we got drunk while we were recording. And you got to picture this because he's in Texas and I'm in Nebraska. And so we recorded every week by calling in. So we'd be on our cell phones. We would call into this recording service that would record everything for us and then give it back to my brother in an MP3 that he could then publish, edit and publish. And we decided that we each picked our poison of choice, and we decided we were going to take a shot every 5 minutes until we were done recording. And from what I remember, which I don't remember most of the recording, and I don't remember, I mean, I've only listened to it once, so I don't remember much about it. It was years ago. But from what I remember, it was a lot of fun, and it was really entertaining. I mean, really entertaining to listen to, because we're funny guys. And there's a huge missing chunk out of the middle of it, the mystery minutes that disappeared and will never be gotten back. And by the end of it, that's where, if you listen to the beginning of this podcast and every podcast, my opening, I always do silence, and then we have 2 seconds of silence. And then the next voice is my brother Kyle from the end of the drunken episode going, Oppenheimer! Because it was when we read the credits, the credits was always, you know, he'd go through stuff and then he'd say, our theme song is by Oppenheimer. And this time it was Oppenheimer. He couldn't remember anything else, but he remembered the name Oppenheimer. So it's just mumble, mumble, mumble. And then he screams Oppenheimer into the phone. And then we mumble again. It was a funny episode, but again, lost to the ages. I don't think I would love to share it with you, because I think a lot of those, I mean, one, they were dirty, really, really dirty, which, you know, I'm okay with dirty, but also, our standards of what's acceptable conversation has changed in the intervening, how long has it been, 7 years, 10 years? I mean, it's been a while since we started the Animal Cast. I've been doing this one for 5 years now, and the Animal Cast was a good while before that. And our standards of what is acceptable have really changed even in that decade. And I would almost be embarrassed to go back and check out some of those. Although, I mean, I suppose, look, if Kyle's got them around, and I ever get copies of them, and maybe I will publish selections from them, the ones that are presentable, the ones that have some real entertainment value. At this point, I might publish portions of them again, but that might be a lot of work too. So who knows? 62 is, I can't read it. Who's that? Oh, there it is. It's from Daz again. Wow, way to go, Daz. I don't know how you'll manage that one. It says, do you believe in the adage, if you want people to understand something, tell them what you're going to tell them the thing, and then tell them what you have just told them? I ask because I am about to start a part-time lecturing post and need advice. Wow. I don't remember the last time I received questions from Daz, so I'm guessing I'm a little bit late with this advice. However, yeah, in general, yes. But, I mean, look, more than that, I mean, presenting your information clearly and being enthusiastic and entertaining about it. I mean, you have to have the energy to love what it is you're talking about in order to get people to really buy into it. They have to be as excited about it as you are. They have to be engaged with it. And yes, I do agree. The standard format of intro where you tell them, hey, here's what we're going to do. And then you do it. And then you get to the end and go, okay, so what did we do? And yes, I agree that there's real value in that format. I mean, you set them up for, hey, here's what you're going to be doing. Their mind is in the right place. They know what they need to be thinking. And then you actually go through it. You know, you've primed them. Then you feed it to them, and then you wrap up with a reminder of, okay, if you take anything away from this, here's what it is, and you give them the salient points at the end. Yeah, I'm all for that. I have no problem with that. But, you know, I'm not a lecturer. I'm just a guy who likes to talk. So, ooh, 41. 41 is? Yeah, see, I got to remember to talk while I'm scrolling, because otherwise you guys just have dead air, right? Mike, what is your favorite REM song? Oh, it's from Ronster. Ronster says, what is your favorite REM song? Well, cliche, but The End of the World as We Know It is my favorite. But when I think about REM, when I think about an REM song, the first thing I think of is Oddfellows 151. And I don't know why. I don't know why that sticks with me, but I really enjoy that song. And it's the first REM song that always comes to my mind. But, you know, if I only had one REM song to put onto a playlist, then it would definitely be End of the World as We Know It. 77. Thank you, R2. 77 comes from Mrs. Darks again. What canceled show do you most miss? The easy answer is Firefly, but I just covered that last time, and I don't really miss it because I watch it a lot. But what canceled show do I most miss? I think the best answer is Futurama. I love Futurama. It was a show that, by its nature, it didn't need to have a definite end. And in fact, they left the ending open such that they could always come back, because they had to, twice they got canceled and came back? I mean, come on. So, you know, there's always that possibility. And the people who work on Futurama have all said, hey, if they want to bring us back, we'll do it. We'll do it in a heartbeat. If someone's willing to pay for it, we will put out more episodes. We're on it. Because again, it's the kind of show that's built that it doesn't have to have a definitive beginning or end, and it easily can stay fresh. As long as the writers are excited about it, as long as the people involved in it are excited about it, it can continue to be funny, and they proved that season after season. I love Futurama. I have, because my kids also love Futurama, and they've seen every episode a million times. I've probably seen every episode of Futurama at least 4 or 5 times. I mean, when it was on Adult Swim, ad nauseum, I would, you know, every night on the way to bed, you know, you lay in bed and you're just letting the TV run, and oh, hey, look, there's Futurama, and then Family Guy, back when Family Guy was funny. But oh my God, which, by the way, I just watched an episode of Family Guy the other night. I was just about to go to sleep, and I'm like, hey, well, all right, what do I need to fill 20 minutes here? I'm like, oh, hey, Family Guy, you know what? I haven't seen any Family Guy in at least a year, and I haven't seen any of whatever the last seasons were. I don't even know if Family Guy is still going, but I know I hadn't seen at least the last season or two. I thought, all right, there's got to be episodes there I haven't watched yet. And so I turned on an episode of Family Guy, and it wasn't funny. It was the weirdest thing. There was nothing funny in it, which makes me wonder if it was ever funny. Wow, maybe Seth MacFarlane isn't a funny guy. Although, you know, American Dad, last time I watched it, was still funny, and that wasn't that long ago. So, I don't know. It was just weird. But anyway, to answer your question, Futurama. 68. 68 is, and this will be the last one. 68 comes from Lucy. Hi, Lucy. And Lucy says, what instruments exactly, and she capitalized exactly, I mean, all caps, so it's important, exactly, does your Pathfinder bard character Dothan play? Can she play all of them? All of them, also all caps. And which ones are her favorites? Okay, yes, Dothan can play anything she gets her hands on. That's not a problem. I have taken at least some points in all available instruments. And so with her charisma, she is really good at just about all of them. But she is spectacularly good at the fiddle. The violin is her favorite instrument. Strings is where the points go. But violin is her favorite. That's the best one. And then she also has the flute, and she's really good at that one too. But again, the flute gets in the way of singing, because singing is really her favorite thing of all. But fiddle is great, because with the fiddle, you can, just like Lindsey Stirling, you can fiddle and dance at the same time, and if you can concentrate well enough, you can fiddle, dance, and sing all at once. So she'll do that. So, oh, no, sorry, R2. Almost rang you again, but we're not gonna. We have gotten to the end. So before the credits, let's bring out GLaDOS, have her do a recap.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2016 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week, Wonderful World by Sam Cooke, and She Blinded Me with Science as performed by William Shatner. All of the songs I use on my podcast are available on iTunes. You check them out, buy them, enjoy them, because I wouldn't put them in my podcast if I didn't love them. You want instructions on making your very own pocket mod, just like the one I keep in my wallet 24/7? You go to pocketmod.com. If you want to do something nice for my podcast, subscribe to it on whatever service you're going to use. Give it 5-star reviews. More importantly, though, recommend it to people. Tell your friends about it. If you enjoy it, then spread the word and let other people enjoy it as well. I love getting new people in. Remember, I am always looking for you listeners to do my work for me. So don't forget to send me questions and topics for my Podomatic. Watch every week on the forums and on Facebook for listener betrayal. And if you have a really interesting nerd fact about an upcoming episode number, or even what Nerd Pride Radio smells like, because again, this week, the smells like was from Kaz again. Thank you, Kaz. You send those to me. Save me all of that grueling research and thinking. You know how I hate to do that. My contact info, mike@nerdprideradio.com, @nerdprideradio on Twitter, facebook.com/nerdprideradio. But to be totally honest, the very best way to talk to me, you guys know it, come sign up for my forums at nerdprideradio.com/forums. You sign up there, send me a message, we'll hang out together, we'll become best friends in the world. We'll have fun. And now it's time for listener betrayal. Before every podcast, I go out to the interwebs and I post out that I'm recording. And anyone who wants to comment on those posts, I can read your stuff right here. So you guys get to add to the podcast as I go. And first off, out on my website, nerdprideradio.com/forums. Let's see. Hold on. I have to do this on my phone today. All right. In your best Mako voice, read the following. Well, I don't know what that is. I'm ashamed. I'm sorry, Kaz. This is from Kaz, by the way. Kaz wants me to read something in my best Mako voice, but again, give me a moment while I go listen to YouTube and find out what that means. Okay, I'm back. Little do you know, I've been gone for like 15 minutes trying to figure this out, because there are so many Makos it could possibly be. Did you know if you do an image search for Mako, all you get is sharks and then the occasional mermaid? And oh yeah, that guy from Legend of Korra, but that's not any of these. See, if I had read further onto Kaz's post, I would have already had the context and known, oh, you mean Mako from Conan the Barbarian. All right, now I know who we're talking about. Okay, so let's start over. Hey, listener betrayal, Kaz says, in your best Mako voice, read the following. All right, I'll do my best. I'll try. You guys know how I am about impressions, but let's try it. Between the time when the oceans drank Atlantis and the rise of the sons of Arius, there was an age undreamed of. And unto this, Conan, destined to wear the jeweled crown of Aquilonia, damn, so close, upon a troubled brow. It is I, his chronicler alone, who can tell of his saga. Let me tell you of the days of high adventure. That's the best I got. All right, next one is also from Kaz. Says Kaz, from Kaz, now answer a simple question for us all. How awesome is DM Darks? Oh, you know what? I'm thinking, because I've been toying around with the idea of making Nerd Pride Radio t-shirts, maybe just making them for my own pleasure, and I don't even necessarily have to sell them or anything. But that would make a great shirt. The back of the shirt, nice big, maybe even with a picture of Pat on it, but a nice big logo on the back that says, how awesome is DM Darks? And then on the front, just a little pocket logo that says Nerd Pride Radio. I would love that. Yeah, see, Lisa says she'd wear that shirt. I know, I'd wear that shirt. So, oh, you just want DM Darks without Nerd Pride Radio on it? You suck. Well, no, there wouldn't be a pocket on it, just a little logo right there where the pocket would be. So on the front, Nerd Pride Radio, and then on the back, how awesome is DM Darks? She's still not going for it. She just doesn't want my name anywhere on her shirt. That's support for you. Oh, man. All right, so anyway, That's it for the website. So let's go out to Facebook. And on Facebook, I have commentary from, I've got commentary from several people. The first one is from Nelly. And Nelly says, "Hey there, hope the recording's going well. Let me see. What do you think motivates you the most? What drives you?" No. I mean, well, hush over there. You're naughty. you know what? My family, my kids, doing right by them, being a good example for my kids, being able to provide for them, being able to have fun with them. That's really my biggest motivator. And so far, I'm doing all right. I give myself a C+ on that. I'm pretty good at this. C+, see, that's passing. That's great. That's all you need, right? Passing? All right. Next comment is from Sarah Beth. And Sarah Beth says, "Hi, Mike. I am so excited about Paranoia coming up." Yeah, me too. I'm looking forward to this. "Also, may I just say that Lisa is awesome. You are a lucky man. Hey, tell me about it. I love her. She's great." Lisa, you're awesome. She's blushing. All right, that's good enough. Yeah, see, now she has nothing to say. I get it. She's cute, too. And then the last one is from Kaz again. Kaz has been dying to get into Listener Betrayal, and he always misses it. I think you got in once before, right? But he always winds up missing it, and it's been driving him crazy. And now, man, when he hits it, he's going to hit it on all fronts. So Kaz says, "Tell us an embarrassing thing you did in character, in game." Okay. The most recent thing I can think of is my character Harley, from the homeroom game. We had this bizarre anarchy statement on the announcements the first day, and we don't know where it came from. But someone took over the announcements and made this statement and gave away secrets of the teachers and was really, rude and brash. And so second day, immediately, in the morning, before announcements are even done, I make my way down to the office, found some excuses, got down to the office, got in there in time to watch the announcements being read off. And as I'm standing there, Kyle's like, "Okay, so what are you going to do now?" And I'm like, "Well, I'm waiting around for the other shoe." And he's like, "What are you talking about?" I said, "The anarchy part. Where's it?" He's like, "Dude, that was lunchtime." "Oh, man, seriously?" And so I went back and I had to reread the whole previous thread. And sure enough, the first time we ran this day, oh, yeah, they happened at lunchtime. So here we are on the repeat day, and I'm headed down there to catch them in the act. And, oh, crap, it wasn't even then. And then I missed lunch, so I wound up the game is moving fast, and so I actually worked. And so I missed the whole section where we did lunch. Didn't get a chance to try and get down there and catch them again. Damn it, I really wanted to see what happened with the announcements. Now, again, we had an inside person at the office who a non-player character, but he tells us that there was nobody there. It came in from somewhere else. It must have been computer hacking, something. But I just wanted to see for myself. I wanted to see the reactions. I wanted to see what happened. So, man, I thought I was so clever getting down there on time. And it turns out, yeah, I was off by several hours. So that kind of sucked. But also, look, in general, my Harley character, it took me a little bit to find her voice and figure out what I wanted to do with her. And I realized that I'm building on my own sense of embarrassment, especially when I was a teenager. The idea that every little thing, just being self-conscious about it and wondering if, oh, God, did I say something stupid? Did I make a fool of myself? Is everyone looking at me? That kind of stuff. And Harley has a lot of that. And I don't know how much it shows because maybe a lot of it's just internal dialogue that I'm running. But I'm really having fun running her as a character. So it's really cool. And actually, that whole business really played into that, because at this point, she's going to come back to the classroom and she's not telling anybody that she did that, because she's just mortified. Mortified. So anyway, that is the end of my Listener Betrayal. So that's the end of this episode. Thank you guys for showing up. Thank you for listening. I will be back next week. We'll have a great time. Out.